Can you believe it? And we're doing numbers on that oil. You know what we're doing? We're refining the oil. We have our refinery for that oil. It's really, I call it tar. It's not oil. It's terrible. We have real stuff. But we're refining it in Houston. So for all of the environmentalists, you ought to look at that, because all of that tar is going right up into the atmosphere. You just ought to take a look. It's the only plant that can do it. We have the only plants that can take tar and make it into oil. And that's what it is. It's a shame. But we were energy independent. We were going to be energy dominant. We were going to be supplying oil to Europe, all over the world. And then a tragic thing happened during the election. It was a tragedy, because you wouldn't have, think of it, all of the problems that you have today, I don't think you would have had any of them. You'd only have success. And that's what's ultimately going to unify this country and unify this party. We have a great Republican Party with tremendous talent, and we want to have unity, and we're going to have unity, and it's going to happen very quickly.
Okay, Grandpa, get the hook. We've heard just about enough.
Sweet, I'm new. I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames.
What's up, Wisconsin? I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. What in the heck was that?
We have tar. There's tar. It's not oil. It's tar.
It's a little plant. It can make the tar into oil, make your car go.
Plants? We have magic plants?
Oil.
I mean, I thought it was going to break into sort of a rambling rendition of like Jack and the Beanstalk or yeah, something. And then the scariest part, of course, is not only the just total rambling nonsense, then the lie. We were energy independent 3 years ago, and then something terrible happened. The election. Fact. We are producing more oil today than we were 3 years ago from the United States. Fact, full stop, period. Go check it out. So, again, lying, incoherent ramblings. And then the punchline, of course, is we're going to have unity, and we're going to have it now. I forget what, if you can get that very end of that clip, Anya. It's ominous, because what he's saying is unity, not unity from good debate and vigorous discussion of complicated issues and the sharing of different opinions. We're going to coalesce. We're going to have hope. No. It's unity because you're all going to do what I'm telling you to do. This is dictator day one. We're going to have unity, and it's going to happen right away.
This should be it. Let's take a listen.
You'd only have success, and that's what's ultimately going to unify this country and unify this party. We have a great Republican Party with tremendous talent, and we want to have unity, and we're going to have unity, and it's going to happen very quickly.
Yeah, that's scary. We're going to have unity, because if you don't line up to support me and I win, I have perfect immunity while I'm president, and I'll sick the DOJ on you. I'll lock up my enemies. I'll lock up anybody that dissents. That's how we're going to have unity. It's out there. I mean, we're going to have it right away. It just doesn't make any sense. Again, lying, incoherent autocracy. That is Donald Trump. You don't have to take my word for it. You can just ask Nikki Haley. Do we have some? Oh, she's on the phone, so we'll let Anya pick up the phone. Everybody's welcome to join us. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Yet this isn't... is he having a halcyon delusion? Again, you don't have to take my word for it. If we have some of Nikki Haley, talking about the chaos that Trump, don't take my word for it, take the actual Republican that was in the primary until today.
They should choose her.
You need to know this. This is not personal for me with Donald Trump. I voted for Donald Trump twice. I was proud to serve America in his administration. But the truth of the matter is, chaos follows him. Everywhere he goes, chaos follows him.
It was chaos during his first administration. Admit it, Nikki. Come on now. It's bananas. So again, themes for Donald Trump. Everything that you hear out of his mouth. Incoherent, lying, autocratic ideas. That's what it is. Let's listen to, again, this is supposed to be a Super Tuesday victory speech. I want to listen to that Trump one cut, like that most unhinged rant where he starts it. I don't know too many folks who run for the presidency of the United States and talk about how much America sucks. But Trump does. Let's take a listen.
Give me one second here. Here it comes.
Pundits and otherwise, that there's never been one like this. There's never been anything so conclusive. This was an amazing night, an amazing day. It's been an incredible period of time in our country's history. It's been sad in so many ways, but I think it's going to be inspiring because we're going to do something that, frankly...
It's amazing, but it's sad. He doesn't even know what point he's trying to make is. And if you haven't watched the video of this, the guy looks not well. Whether you talk about the bronzer or the hair color or the slumped shoulders and there's just a level of defeat. He ain't there, you know. These legal issues, the trials that are going on, and let's not forget, you know, what got buried in the news cycle because of Super Tuesday, of course, was the fact that Alan J. Weisselberg, his chief financial officer from the Trump Organization, pleaded guilty to perjury on Monday and is likely facing somewhere around another 5 months in jail. Remember, he already was sentenced to 5 months. He spent 100 days in jail, a little bit over 3 months. And he's going to he's going back to Rikers Island. And he perjured himself over the 10,000 foot apartment that Trump had in his building that he claimed over and over and over and over again was 30,000 feet. And Alan J. Weisselberg was part of that. So the man is literally disintegrating, I would say melting, before our eyes. If we can listen to a little bit, I wanted to hear about his comments about Russia and Israel and Iran. If you've got that, I think that's also from that first cut, Anya.
People say, a lot of experts have said, the stock market's the only thing that's doing well, and that's doing well from parts unknown.
Hold on one moment.
It's okay. We can do it. Experts are saying that the stock market's doing really well. And he goes on to say, well, that's because of our poll numbers. No, no, Donald, it's not. The guy had one crisis in his administration. One. Not two eruptions of near world war. Not inflation. And by the way, all of those things, inflation, Ukraine, the Israel invasion by Gaza, the situation that's deteriorating in the Middle East, all of that was made possible by Donald Trump. It was enabled. It was encouraged. It was fostered. It was given life by Donald Trump. His mishandling of his one crisis, COVID, is what sent inflation skyrocketing. And Joe Biden has done exactly what he needed to do. Wages are now increasing faster than inflation is. He's brought inflation down. We can criticize Joe Biden's handling of Gaza, but what we can't do is say that Trump would be better, because Trump is the guy that said, well, Israel should finish them off and wanted to have a Muslim registry. Yeah, that's not what we do here. Did you find the cut where he's talking about Russia?
Barrier that I was with Iran, as you know, was nobody's been able to do for a long time. We've watched our country take a great beating over the last 3 years, and nobody thought a thing like this would be possible. We wouldn't have Russia attacking Ukraine. We wouldn't have Israel being attacked. Iran, as you know, was broke when I was running things. They were broke. They didn't have money for Hamas. They didn't have money for Hezbollah.
No. No, Iran was not broke. I just... Again, just pick, it's a Venn diagram of incoherent ramblings, lies, and authoritarianism. That's it. Sometimes he's checking all three boxes with his ramblings. This is the guy who had 16 members of his cabinet resign. And those 16 members of his cabinet, so people that said, yes, I will serve Donald Trump, these are conservatives, these are Republicans. These 16 members of his cabinet now are telling everyone, don't vote for Donald Trump. He goes on and starts, I don't even know what you call it, just blathering on and on about immigration. Well, again, immigration was at an all-time low before Donald Trump took office. It was at an all-time low under George W. Bush, and it went even lower under Obama. Obama was roundly criticized by all sorts of left and progressive agencies and organization and advocacy groups because he was so tough on the border. What has led largely to the migrant crisis that we see and the immigration crisis that we see was COVID, was civil unrest in these countries. Frankly, some of the impacts of climate change. People aren't safe anymore. Donald Trump made all of that worse. Again, it's the Venn diagram, incoherent ramblings, lies, and authoritarianism brought to you by the GOP candidate for the President of the United States, the orange guy. I'm Maggie Dawn. We'll be back with more in a moment here on the Maggie Dawn Show. We got a stacked lineup for you today. You're not going to want to miss this. We're going to be lighting it up here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us. We'll take some calls when we get back. 855-75-CIVIC. 855-752-4842.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. When you're out there.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-75-CIVIC. Andrew from Maine texting us that, of course, not just one crisis, but two government shutdowns. He couldn't even manage to avoid government shutdowns, which every economist will tell you, even the conservative ones, hurts the economy, slows growth, hurts the middle class. Here's some facts about Joe Biden. We have 3.2 million more jobs than we did before the pandemic. We've had the fastest job growth in modern history, except for job growth under Clinton, who is a master at creating job growth and not always in the way that ended up helping the middle class. Joe Biden pulled more children out of poverty than any other president in the last 20 years. He's helping with the student loan crisis. He just finished the renegotiation of drug prices for Medicare and Medicaid recipients. He's going off insane credit card interest rates. These are things that help all of us, at least all of us that aren't in the billionaire one percenter class. And now I'm gonna give you some hope about what happened on Super Tuesday, because I think a lot of people are freaked out. Let's go to the phones, but don't worry. I promise you, we will not leave the Maggie Dawn Show without hope. this afternoon. Carmela from Milwaukee, what is up? You are on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Hey, Maggie. I'm looking forward to you giving me and all of us some hope in this crazy situation. But I have a question. I don't even know if it's a question. The absolute immunity case that's going to be brought up to the Supreme Court. Am I wrong? If, let's say, everybody goes bonkers, which they already have proven they've done with the Supreme Court, if they grant him or all presidents absolute immunity, wouldn't that be under President Biden's jurisdiction, and then he could do something about it? I mean, it's so absurd, and I can see the ramifications if he does do something, and I see when he fights back the ridiculous rebuttals that are brought up about him compared to Trump. But I mean, how does this stop? I like, you were bringing up hope. I'm like, I need hope because this is so ridiculous, and I'm concerned and worried. And
as well, you should be, Carmela. Thanks. Just had to jump in. We got callers stacked up. Want to get to everybody. First of all, keep listening, Carmela. Everybody keep listening. I'm going to give you hope before our show is out. As to the immunity question, yeah, that's the weird thing. Like, he's granted immunity while Joe Biden is still in office. Here's the conceit, right? Here's the conceit. By conceit, I mean the falsehood, the ridiculousness that the Supreme Court is engaging in, that Trump and his allies and these advocates of presidential immunity are engaging in. It's twofold. The first part is that they know Democrats won't do these things. We've always been the party that is filled with adults that do the business of governing. We've never been great at the punchy one-liners. I mean, only Republicans could sell the economic fiction that if you lower taxes on rich people and businesses, government revenues, which are basically taxes, somehow will go up. That's ridiculous. Doesn't even make sense. You collect less taxes, somehow you'll collect more taxes. That's stupid. There's no economics that proves that. The guy that came up with this, his name is Laffer, is a laughingstock amongst economists. So that's thing one. They know Democrats, Joe Biden won't order the assassination of Donald Trump and claim, I'm immune. So it's just stupid. The conceit part two is that the Supreme Court knows that that's not true, that presidents aren't totally above the law in all matters. There are certain areas where you can see that there may be some presidential immunity. For example, battlefield decisions that may be later found to be criminal. You can see how that might happen. That is reprehensible, and it should be morally and presidents should be morally culpable. But what happens in the heat of a battle and some of the decisions that have to get made, that is different. What he's talking about is stupid. And the Supreme Court doesn't even buy it. All they're doing is depriving the American people of our innate right to a speedy trial of this defendant, the most important criminal trial of this century, I would argue. Jack from Merrimack, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you?
First of all, when my mother was suffering from dementia, she had difficulty in identifying even me, calling me by the name of another person. She was often angry, threatening. She would.
Are you telling me, Jack, that Trump reminds you of your dementiatic mom?
Well, I would say I would diagnose him with the serious dementia, and. My qualifications are every bit as good as the judge that decided that mifepristone was not safe. They're every bit as good as the Wisconsin legislature that named the nine things that cannabis could be used to medically. treat.
Yeah, and then Robin Voss pulled it back because no medical marijuana. Let's remember we have that to thank Robin Voss for. Yeah, 100%. He is. If you look up symptoms of dementia, Donald Trump is checking all of the boxes. He can't remember who he's running against. He refers to Obama. He refers to Jeb Bush. He's confused. Frankly, I don't think he could find Israel on a map. That's what I would like. Put a map in front of him. Show us where Israel is. Show us where Iran is. If you want to know about Joe Biden's mastery of the issues, there's a New Yorker article out. Go read it in its entirety. You can do so for free as long as it's one of your first three articles of the month. But he just walks around the globe with the New Yorker journalist and he has total mastery of the geopolitical issues. Can't say that about Donald Trump. Got to be quick, Stephen from Green Bay. You're on the Maggie Dawn Show. Are you there, Stephen? It's Maggie.
Hey, Maggie. I don't know if you saw it, but there's a TikTok compilation of Trump talking this weekend at his event that he held, and he's not well, really, like almost like Mitch McConnell like stuff where he's dazing off and, you know, slurring words.
Yeah, he's there. I mean, it's happening all over. We'll go see if we can get that TikTok and share some of that sound. We got to take some important but quick messages. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by Dr. Jeanette Kowalik, former commissioner of the city of Milwaukee's health department. She led the city through the COVID epidemic. You're not going to want to miss this because, boy, did she take some heat and some crap from people who shouldn't have been talking any smack. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked, 855-75-CIVIC. Join us this afternoon. It's going to be real. And don't you forget, folks, Carmela, I'm talking to you in Milwaukee and all across the state. I'm going to leave you with hope this afternoon. So you're not going to want to miss a minute of the Maggie Dawn Show. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Joining me this next half hour is Dr. Jeanette Kowalik, who is the former City of Milwaukee Health Commissioner and saw us through the COVID pandemic while I was Milwaukee County's Chief Legal Officer. She is also an adjunct professor for Baylor University in Morehouse, in their medical schools, teaching about the social determinants of health. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Dr. Kowalik.
Hi, Maggie. Thanks for inviting me.
Heck yeah. We used to see each other on the Zoom calls from hell with about 100 officials on them.
Yes.
It was wild. And then on occasion, we would see each other on like news briefings or like the press meetings and stuff. That whole time period for me is still blurry. Is it as blurry for me as it is for you?
Yeah. And honestly, like one of my colleagues had told me about Zoom filters like way after all of that. And I'm like, I was doing like full makeup and everything. I didn't know you could use filters. So it was a lot of effort to get on those Zooms every day. But nonetheless, we survived in some way, shape, or form, right?
We sure did, Jeanette. And that was the thing. I mean, I remember these brief respites where I thought, oh, this is great because I don't have to get up and put on makeup and get dressed and go to work. But then I was always having to show up on these Zoom calls with like half of state and local leadership and was putting the face on anyways. I soon discovered the heavy eyeglass frame tactic.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, they can't see all of the bags under my eyes if I wear these big old chunky glasses. That was my workaround for a few months.
Yeah. And accessories to distract, right?
Oh, heck yeah. Big ol', I like my hoop earring game went up like tenfold during the pandemic. Plus, I was on Amazon like every day ordering other stuff for my home office. It was a whole thing.
For sure.
One of the things that I, in all seriousness, both of us had, and I think you had a position that underwent so much more public scrutiny. I was there to basically help the county understand what we could and could not do. And in Milwaukee County, we have a Department of Health and Human Services, but in terms of enforcing stay-at-home orders and the different requirements for businesses during the epidemic, especially in the first, say, 8 to 10 months, that was the city of Milwaukee. And it's, and in many counties across the state, and even in the northern portions of the state, there were health officers, health department officials that were facing these same battles, no matter, you know, which sort of side of the political spectrum that jurisdiction happened to be on. And I wanted to talk to you a bit about your personal experience going through that.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a lot. So when you think back on that time, what's one of the first things that sort of comes to mind for you?
I know we can't curse on radio, so I'm the daughter of a Marine. So,
oh, yeah.
I would just say a caca show.
Yes.
Basically. But honestly, like, understanding like public health authority, what state statutes like support public health. I knew about that. Like, we received training once you become a health officer in the state of Wisconsin. But I was always like, please God, please do not allow us to have like an outbreak or something major while I'm trying to rebuild this health department. So I knew coming in, it was going to be rough. And it was like 1,000 times more intense than I had could have even imagined. Yeah. So I just want to shout out Alderman Borkowski, because he was the one that warned me. He was like, you're going to like enter the hornet's nest. Are you sure you want to do
real.
This?
Yeah. Mark was always.
He was like much better climate than coming back to Milwaukee, even though I'm from Milwaukee. It was just like intense from everybody. It wasn't just like one community group. It was like nonstop
that
drama.
That was the thing that when I think back on that time, like, I was getting it sort of what I would call demands and criticism and incredible stress and pressure from every constituency, right, that I was serving, in other words, my clients, and was trying to lift up and support in many ways the city's health department, because there were some challenges in terms of the legal services and the understanding of the law. Because Wisconsin law pre-2020 granted, frankly, incredible powers to local health department officials, whether at the county level or the city level, frankly, more power than was vested in the state Department of Health and Human Services. And there was this many bizarre moments where, again, constituencies within the city of Milwaukee, but then the different communities bordering the city of Milwaukee and within the county all thought they knew a better way to do things. It was sort of the rise of the non-expert telling experts what to do.
Do you have
a story that might stick out in your mind where you were having one of those types of conversations?
Well, honestly, like, if you recall, so this is like 4 years to the month that we had our first COVID case. It was Friday the 13th.
Yep. I was like, it was March 13th. I remember it happening.
Yeah. And they were like, oh my God. Cause it was like, oh, it's a county case. It's a city case. And it just exploded from there. I mean, we were just really scrambling. The city's corp council, you all, like, everyone was trying to like get on the same page with our policies and orders and all of that. But honestly, things had moved so quickly, and the state, like, figuring out that they wanted to put this stay-at-home order in place to provide blanket protection for the entire state really helped a lot of smaller jurisdictions.
Yep.
Because everybody was able to, like, this is what it is for the state. I mean, you had like Illinois and Chicago, you know, they had cases before us. But, you know, I get this whole like tension of like, if one jurisdiction or one city has more strict orders or protections in place. All someone has to do is just drive, you know, half a mile or a mile up to the next jurisdiction and have looser restrictions or none at all. And we know disease doesn't work that way. Like, disease cares, doesn't care at all about all of this stuff. So it really tested a lot of our resolve about what do we really care about? Are we really looking out for the best interests of those that have a lot of challenges, a lot of access to resource issues, poverty, historic underinvestments, all of the things, you know, City of Milwaukee has the brunt of the poverty in Milwaukee County. So that was always my intention, as well as Mayor Barrett's at the time. Like, we needed to provide some support and protection for our people. So once a lot of that started to go away, that was like in May when the state Supreme Court had struck down the stay-at-home order for the whole state. And I think it was just Milwaukee and City of Milwaukee and Racine that maintained our orders, and everyone else got rid of them. And that was when things really got difficult. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of tension, a lot of disagreement, a lot of philosophies being tested. And me being from Milwaukee, living in Milwaukee, and also understanding what some of my colleagues were dealing with, I was willing to get fired. I didn't care. I was like, look, if we're not going to do what's best for those in our community that don't have the connections, don't have access to the mayor's office, you know, all of these like political wonk type people, then fine, fire me. I'll get another job. I looked at it like a coach, you know, like coaches, they get fired all the time. They get jobs like easily. I mean, look what happened with the Bucks.
Yeah.
Like, you'll be all right, you know.
And they get their contracts paid out. I wish we could get that kind of a deal. I mean, what the heck?
I know, right? That's, you know, we're no longer in government, but that's the thing, right? Like, be savvy about your contracts. But nonetheless, that was really difficult for us. And we, you know, had a lot of tension in our council. We were being questioned, why are we doing this? And jurisdiction X in Milwaukee County is not doing this. So the fact that we weren't all on the same page, it just really stressed the need for having more of a county coordinated response, as you all know. And then even like, well, why don't we have a county health department versus all of these city health departments and combined health departments in Milwaukee County, which is a whole nother topic. But yeah, it was just rough. And I realized like in June that things were not going to get better, like how things were going nationally and just talking to other health commissioners and officers in different places across the country, that this thing is not going away anytime soon. And lo and behold, it's 2024.
Yeah,
we're still dealing with it, and it's still being minimized. Like, it's not the flu. People died from COVID.
Yes.
You know, it's like causing all these other disabilities and
well, in the long COVID,
30-year-olds having heart attacks.
Yes, and long COVID, and it's long COVID. Statistically, we now are seeing that much higher rates for women than men. We don't know why. And I just wanted to take a moment to give a point of emphasis to something that you said, Jeanette, and that is, as public health officers, especially in a jurisdiction that's as diverse as the city of Milwaukee, but even in demographically much, much less diverse places, but where people also have social determinants of health that make them more susceptible to disease, especially airborne disease like COVID, the public health officer's job is not to craft policy that serves only part of the community. It is to craft policy that protects even the most susceptible person within the community. That is the public health officer's job. And I talk about on the show all the time that I truly admire and have such respect for you and your fellow public health officers. And I wish more people in government were willing to say what you just said, which is, I will lose my job, but I'll be damned if I won't do the right thing. I'll be damned if they don't hear the truth, because if they're going to make this decision, I'm going to tell them what they need to hear, and it will be the truth. And if they choose to ignore it, that's on them, but I'm going to do my job. And that that idea that we hold these jobs in trust, and in trust for everyone in our community, not just the wealthy, not just those with access, but the most vulnerable. Such a critical point. I wanted, and I, so first, I just want to say thank you for what you did for the city. I think we would have lost more lives if you had not been in the position that you were. So you saved lives, Jeanette. And I hope that forever you take that with you, because you were doing the work that many people would have been too afraid to do.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I 1,000% believe that and know that. That was like revealed to me. I'm a Christian. So, I mean, that was like something that really made sense to me. Like the point I mentioned about Alderman Borkowski, why would you come back? Everything is great. This is going to be a very difficult position. I didn't necessarily understand the magnitude of going into the hornet's nest, yeah. moving back to my hometown, Nineveh, if you will,
yep.
and dealing with all of the dynamics of Milwaukee, right? But once the pandemic started, it was clear to me that's why I came back. That's why I left my comfortable position in D.C. and all of the amenities and just life out east to be back in Milwaukee to save lives. And that was what it was all about for me. So I stayed in the role as long as possible. I tried to make sure there were good people in place to yep. continue the work beyond me. You know, shout out to Marlena Jackson for staying and being the interim. But as you know, once she left and then the policies were allowed to expire, sunset yep. under the person that followed her. And then we started to see things tick up, right? Yep.
Of course.
Policy works. Like when you have policy in place and you deal with a lot of the nuances of implementing the policy, like what is policy if it's not enforced? We have right. a lot of issues with that. And I'm being very cautious in how I air things out because there were some people that were looking to get their lick back, if you will,
yes.
to try to cause harm. And, you know, egos were flying
all over the place.
Mansplaining.
Oh, yes. We're going to talk more about that. We got to take a couple of quick important messages. You're not going to want to miss what me and Dr. Jeanette Kowalik talk about next, because it's about women trying to tell men oftentimes what is up and the backlash from that. Stick with us. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I am joined this half hour by Dr. Jeanette Kowalik, the former City of Milwaukee Health Commissioner that helped save lives in the city and statewide during the COVID epidemic. Back with more in just a moment.
Today at Restaurante Casa Noble.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
Don't mistake it, girl, that's all you ask of me.
What's up, Wisconsin? You are back with Maggie and Dr. Jeanette Kowalik, the former City of Milwaukee Health Commissioner. I wanted to play you a little sound. A gentleman in Tennessee was interviewed yesterday about Nikki Haley, Jeanette. Let's take a quick listen, and then we will discuss.
What do you think of Nikki Haley? Did you ever consider her?
You know, what I got to say, you don't really want to put it on.
Let me hear it.
A woman's not going to be a good president. She don't have no balls to scratch. She's just going to scratch her head. All a woman's good for in my book is having babies and taking care of the house. But that's the old thing, you know. But I'm old school.
Okay. Now, this is Mr. Emmett Martin from Tennessee. And while he may speak with an accent, I think what Jeanette and I will tell you is his opinion, while colorfully expressed, ain't just Emmett's opinion. When Jeanette and I talk about egos and things like that, when you're dealing with folks in government, I know I have gotten a fair share of shade, and it's not even shade. I don't even call these things microaggressions anymore. It's like where guys tell me their resume, you know, and like the finger wagging kind of thing. I've got a bunch of stories about very particular episodes, but Jeanette, if do you have one that stands out that's like a favorite of yours? Because I could go for days on this stuff.
I just, in summary, how we would, you know, prepare talking points, because we would have to have updated numbers for all of those daily media interviews. You know, oftentimes my talking points would be stolen from me and I would just have to wing it. So a lot of ad-libbing. Like, wait a minute. like
I wrote that.
Doing my own PR, basically. Yeah, it was interesting. So it was like, okay, we're on the same team. Like the yep. community or the public is not like picking sides. At least I don't think so. But yeah, there was a lot of that going on. And then of course there's other allies and folks that are like really like rooting for you and sending you messages to just keep you going because they could just see the energy shift. Like, wow, this is what we're doing. Like,
yeah, I've had the shine stolen a few too many times. I'm like, listen, if you don't have good enough ideas and you got to steal mine, okay, cool. I recently was actually at a dinner, and I had one of the gentlemen, older guys, sitting at the dinner, and we were talking about some pretty heavy stuff. Legit would not look at me for the entire dinner. Would repeat stuff I said like 5 minutes later, and eventually I had said a couple times, I just said that. And it took a couple of other men in the dinner to point this out. I'm sure it's happened to you where you're in meetings and a gentleman or a couple of gentlemen don't make eye contact with you for the whole. What is up with that?
Yeah, it's so bizarre because you're right. It's like they'll say the same thing that you say and then that person gets all of the credit and then you're like, I mean, I never was in the role for ego. Like even yes. like me stressing like, oh, I'm a doctor. Like I'm not a medical doctor, but I am a doctor. Like that even, like if I went to Harvard and got my medical degree, they would find some way to poo-poo that.
You right.
know, like, oh, you must have slept with somebody to get your degree or, you know, just whatever BS people kind of conjure up about you. But I do notice too, like, you know, we're attractive women.
Well, thank
and
you.
That adds to it, right? Like sometimes they just can't fathom that a beautiful woman could be intelligent and be accomplished and actually be well-spoken and well-read and all of these things. It's just like they have a meltdown.
Yeah, you can sometimes see the implosion happening real time because they've got, yeah. I've had the opposite. So because I do radio, not everybody watches us on the stream, which you always can. You can see how beautiful Dr. Jeanette is on YouTube and Facebook. Me too, on my better days. But I've had instances where I've met people and they've only heard me on the radio and they look at me and go, oh, this is not what I was expecting. And I'm like, what? And I don't even want to know what they were expecting, but like, you can clearly see that they are a little bit shocked and dismayed.
Discombobulated.
Oh, right. To lean into Dan Schaefer's discombobulation. I would like to give you a moment to share with folks a parting thought or two. If you want to speak on what a social determinant of health is and how important it is for folks to really start to understand this. We got about 3 minutes left.
Okay, real quick. So I teach this topic. There's a lot of different ways to package social determinants of health. And honestly, like even saying social in something, sometimes folks will just run with that and think you're talking about social services, like right. welfare benefits and things like that. And when we talk about social determinants of health, we're talking about all of the different things that impact one's ability to live a high quality life, like access to transportation, fair wages, paid family leave, environment, but being able to vote, all of those things tie in together into social determinants of health. So if you look at Milwaukee County, Milwaukee City, you see that there's like these heat maps of various diseases and conditions, whether it be violence, lead poisoning, obesity, you name it, COVID, you see like the same distributions of disease, like in the inner city. You see over time how things shifted. I'm Black and Polish, so I like how the South Side has changed to be more Hispanic or Latinx, and then just the pockets on the North Side that have a lot of Hmong individuals or people from other Asian countries and so on and so forth. So you just see these things playing out. You don't even need to know who lives there, but you could just look and tell like, okay, I see something's going on here. And a lot of that is due to policies that were crafted years ago, homeowner loan corp, redlining maps, and just different ways to create division and cut off access to different amenities in one's community. So that's something that the county, you all did a great job of understanding that and trying to make things better under Chris Abley. And
now David, yep.
Yeah, David Crowley. So that's been great.
We've got I've got to jump in. I'm sorry, we're running out of. Would you do me the grace of coming back, Dr. Jeanette? because I would love to do a deep dive on this and help people understand what all this stuff means. My great thanks and appreciation. You have saved lives in your community. Dr. Kowalik, thank you for being with me. Thank you for being with the state of Wisconsin here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Blessings and abundance to you, my friend. We will be back in just a few minutes with my friend, Supervisor Steve Taylor, here on the Maggie Dawn Show. We're going to chop it up some more. Thank you, Dr. Jeanette Kowalik, former City of Milwaukee Health Commissioner. I will send you some dates and we will have you back on and we'll do like a whole thing just on social determinants of health and helping people understand what that is. And I'll just give you a little seed. We are heard up north as well.